The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Time for some parenting advice from the expert. It's our Ask the Expert weekly slot. And our parenting expert is Dr. Mary O'Kane, lecturer in psychology and early childhood education. And you've been getting your questions into us as well. Good morning, Mary.
Well, good morning, Dermot. Lovely to talk to you.
And you. I've heard you many times. Never had the pleasure of sitting across from you. So I'm delighted to get stuck into some parenting questions.
Thank you.
Because as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it doesn't matter what age your children are. You assume that all your questions will maybe stop once they, you know, start making their own breakfast and wiping their own bums. But that's not the case. You know, I have an inter-railing teenager at the moment and I'm full of questions.
Dermot, my eldest is 25. And believe me, I think when she'll be 45, it'll still be the same. Yeah, but anyway,
that's what I hear. Definitely. The questions never stop. But let's get into them now. My two teenage sons, Mary, have been at each other's throats since the school holidays. Particularly the eldest seems to have no patience at all with his brother. It is constant and is turning our home into a battleground. I'm working from home 3 days a week. I would prefer to be in the office at this point as the constant conflict is draining. There's no specific issue. It's just niggles that turn into rows every day of the week, I think, because they're spending so much time together. Any advice on helping them to get on better?
Oh, Dermot, nobody wants their house to be a battleground, do they? I mean, it's the last thing you want. And we kind of laugh sometimes. We go, oh, you know, they at each other's throats. But oh, no, 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 that's really not funny. And the idea of wishing you were in work. I know we've all done that. Okay, we've done it occasionally, but it's not a nice way to be over the summer.
No.
But it's funny. There's no specific issues, niggles. How do you know there's no specific issue? I always think, ask them. Talk to them. You know, when with little kids, and we talk about behaviour being an iceberg. So you see the tip of the iceberg and you think, you know, that iceberg might be them acting out, whatever's going on. But what you need to know is what is going on underneath. But that's true with teenagers too. Mm. So particularly if the parent thinks it's the eldest, I separate, or always divide and conquer, kind of good way to start, but separate and just talk to them. Is everything okay? I've noticed you seem to be driving each other up the walls. Is there something going on? Because you actually don't know if there could be something going on.
Yeah.
So do that. And if there is something going on, so if the eldest does say, well, actually, yeah, you know, he gets away with murder or whatever it might be, then you can sit with them together. But always ask first before assuming. But then I do think there's a point when if they're not doing anything, and if they're there together over the summer, could they get a summer job? Are there clubs? Could you pay them to do chores? Like, think, okay, what do you want done around the house? Pay them to do it. Say, I'm not against a little bit of bribery every so often, but just say, okay, here's a list. You could do this. Could they start up a grass cutting job? Get them together on something. You know what I mean?
You've never met my children. You know, when you go, I will pay you to do chores. And they're like, we just get money into our Revolut. Why would we work for it? And you're like, I really started a terrible system. I didn't think this through. My daughter is due to start, says another message, junior infants in September. She was 5 in May, has done really well in play school, and I know she's ready, but she can be a little sensitive. Any tips for helping her settle in those first few weeks?
I love this, Dermot, because it's the three things you like to tick off. 5 in May, like, yay, that's a really good age to start. Like, that kid has had her 2 years free preschool, you know, the etchy year, so that's good. Doing well in play school, like, yay, that's really good. Like, she's been socialising, she's been settling in. And the words you want every parent to hear, I know she is ready. That, isn't that just the way you want to send them in the door? So like, yay for this kid, but can be a little sensitive. Oh, you know, Dermot, I think so many of them are just that little bit, and I wouldn't call it anxious, just a little bit nervous starting. The most important thing is they feed off us. Mm. So when she starts, you need to be calm. And I'm always saying to parents, you kind of say these things to you. Oh, isn't it lovely you're starting school? But if your face shows terror and you drop them off at the door, it's what they see in your face is more important.
Yeah.
But I have three things that are really good for any kids starting in September, and they really work. And they're really silly little things, Dermot, but they work. They're good. And the first thing is what I call matching love hearts. And what you do is where you would, say we're taking your pulse and your wrist, that just that place in your wrist, you draw a little love heart just with a pen or a red marker on your wrist and the exact same on theirs. And you tell them, okay, now we now have our matching love hearts. Anytime you're thinking of me, you put your fingers on your love heart, kind of as if they were taking their pulse, you know, little fingers on. and you think of me, they feel their pulse. They feel like a heartbeat. Mm. And you say, I will do the exact same. I'll put my fingers on anytime I need to think of you. And it, they just respond really well to it. The second one.
I think I'll use that for public speaking.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Bring the heart rate down.
Yeah, exactly.
The second one, and because little kids, five-year-olds are really concrete, so not good at dealing with abstracts. So if you say to them, oh, just think about me if you're missing me. Like, yeah, that's hard. Something concrete. So I call this pebble in my pocket. So go to the beach, go to the garden, anywhere, and just get two matching pebbles. Give them a pebble for their pocket. It goes in their jacket pocket or in their pencil case or whatever. And you do the same. But again, it's really, it's something real. Mm. And say to them, you squeeze your pebble if you're missing me. And I'll squeeze my pebble every time I miss you. And you keep it in the pocket of your jeans. So when you collect them, go, I have my pebble. I've been squeezing my pebble today. It's just really, they're silly, but they're really reassuring. Mm. And the third one, which works even as you get older, like if you have older kids who are a little bit iffy about going back in September, you know, the what if kids, and it's like, but you know, what if this happens? And but what if that happens? And what if I don't get to sit beside my friend? And what if my friend won't play with me? And what if teacher asks me to read? So for the what if kids, the day before, not last thing before bed, but the evening before, sit with them and go, tell me anything you're worried about. And you get a piece of paper and write each worry down, chop them up into individual pieces so that you've all their worries, their what ifs for the following day. Say, I am going to keep your worries in my pocket when you go in there. So you put them like in a shirt pocket. Mm. I have them here. I love if you can get a shirt pocket that you're at your heart. And I know these things sound really silly, but they're little things are big to kids.
Yeah, I love that one. So I've a 12-year-old who's, or 13-year-old who's starting secondary school, and I think that's something that we could bring in there.
Dermot, even at that age, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I want to get to more questions. My daughter is 12 and being excluded by friends, says the text. Can you advise how to best support her? I've tried to talk to the parents, but their child is the ringleader, so they don't care. Should she just move on? Says Karen.
Oh. Dermot,
that's a tough one.
There are
a
few things more painful. Yes. Mm. Being exclusion is, first of all, exclusion is bullying. Can we just say that straight out? Because bullying is something that has been done deliberately and is being done continually over time to hurt, to demean. Mm. So it is painful for parent and child. Often approaching the parent doesn't work. And there is often a queen bee, male or female, it doesn't matter. There's usually a queen bee, a ringleader. And that child calls the shots. And they pick who's included or who's excluded. And the other kids are too frightened to stand up, because if they stand up against the ringleader, they are frightened. I'm going to be the next one that's excluded. So I'm really sorry. This is a really tough one. I don't have an easy answer for you. What I would say to you is, try and find other friendship groups that keep her going in the meantime. I'm not sure if it's boy or girl. Sorry, I thought it was a girl. But keep the
girl.
Yeah, keep her going in the meantime. Does she have a cousin she's friendly with? Does she have another kid on the road? Is there a kid from swimming class? By building up a different tribe, you are letting her see, this is not me. So all these other people like me, this is the problem. Then sit and talk to her about, what are the qualities of friendship? What do you look for in a friend? So what do you want in a friend? And then go back to this queen bee and say, now, does that girl have these qualities? Mm. So you're actually making your child see, instead of, because they feel it's me, I've done something wrong, you're making them see, actually, that's not a good friend. She's not a nice person, the one that's doing it to me, and it can help. As for that little queen bee, very difficult to deal with that individually. Do you know something, Dermot? What we all should be doing with all of our kids, we should be teaching them to be upstanders instead of bystanders. So, because they're the ones who have the power, the other kids. So there'll be other kids in that group who know this is happening. Mm. They're too scared to stand up. But if we taught all our kids, when you see something happening to somebody else, you have the power as the bystanders. If you just make eye contact, smile at her, walk away with her, you're taking the power from the bully. Mm. Our kids don't seem to realise that. But my heart goes out to the parent and the child.
Socialising is a tough one too. It's Dermot Whelan in for Anton on the Anton Savage Show this morning. We're in our parenting slot, or Ask the Expert slot, with Dr. Mary O'Kane. Here's one, Mary. My 14-year-old son is a good kid, does well at school, and has never caused us any trouble at home. He is good with his younger siblings and gets on well with myself and my husband. but he seems to struggle with forming friendships. He gets on well enough in school, but has no strong friendship groups in his class. Over the summer, has been spending most of the time here with me or messing around with his younger brothers. He connects online with friends, but seems to have no social life at all. I'm not sure whether to try to intervene, and if I should, how?
Dermot, I'd say that has described what a lot of 14-year-olds are living. First of all, again,
particularly since COVID.
We encouraged them to go on screens in COVID. I mean, even for school they had to. But we said to them, this is how you connect. They were doing it before COVID, but COVID has exacerbated it, I think. But it's funny. At 14, you're going through adolescence. Your hormones are all over the place. Your brain development is suddenly going, rah! And he's doing really well. Like, for 14, isn't he doing brilliantly? I mean, I'm sorry, he's doing well at school. Never cross coupled at home. He gets on well with his younger siblings. I mean, yay! He's a fantastic kid.
And there is a sentence in it as well, Mary. It says, he seems to have no social life at all. Maybe we see sometimes through an adult's lens, and we see, well, if they're not standing out in the road physically with a gang of people, they have no social life. And I've certainly had to temper that with my own kids and realise, or at least open my mind to the idea that they socialise differently and there are different rules at play.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. The parent is looking at it the way we see friendship at 14. That's what we did at 14. You went to knock for someone down the road and they weren't in. You went to knock at the next house and they weren't. That's what we did. You got your bike and off you went. That's not how they interact now. Funny, the parent doesn't say, my child is really unhappy. Like, sometimes parents write in here and they go, my 14-year-old is desperately unhappy because he doesn't have a friend. There's nothing in here about this kid being unhappy. And maybe he's actually balanced between his online world and playing with his siblings and being happy, maybe reading or doing whatever he's doing
sure
in the house.
I'm sure our previous messenger, whose kids are tearing lumps out of each other, would be delighted with this scenario. He's happily playing away with his younger brothers.
He's doing well. The other thing is, but I would say, do encourage him to find his tribe. If this parent is listening and thinking, no, you've got it wrong, he actually really would like to have more friends. Is it just that maybe the boys in school, the friends in school are not his tribe? Like, is he into Cody or Jojo? Is he into, you know, swimming, anything, like anything he's into, try and find an outlet where he'll meet kids who are similar to him. At that age, if they play a sport together, or if they're into, it could be photography club, it could be theatre school, whatever it is. If they find other kids in the same with the same interest, they very often will really bond over that. So that could be worth looking into as well, like-minded kids.
Another one says, I have a 2.5-year-old who is not saying any words yet. He does babble. My mother-in-law says my husband was the same, but then just started chatting away when he was about 3 or more. But it is really starting to worry me. Any tips or advice on trying to get him to start speaking?
At 2.5, you actually would be expecting a child to say words. So at 2.5, most kids would have about 50 words, but by 3, they could have 300 or 400. At 2, they can very often say 2 words. They might say, baby cry. You know, they will put 2 words together. So the first thing I would say is always go to your public health nurse. If you think any concerns about your child, if you think, you know what, my gut is telling me there's something not right here, call your public health nurse, okay? And just look into getting it checked out. It might be nothing. Your mother-in-law could be right. There are kids who will just, sometimes, it's not that they can't speak. They actually understand everything that's going on. Sure, they're sitting back being looked after and they get what they want. You haven't got to the point they need to make their needs known yet, you know? So your mother-in-law could be completely right. Never just assume, always get it checked out. But if you want to encourage language, there's a few things you can do. Bedtime stories. Well, stories any time of the day, but bedtime is just an easy time. Just if you keep reading and reading, reading to them. But also, we talk about something we call serve and return. So the idea is, anything that you're interacting with the child, you say something, stop, and kind of look at them and wait for them to make any response, even if he's not using his words, if he's babbling back. So she says something to the child. The child babbles back. You stop and go, ooh, you say a proper sentence back to the child. Really simple. The child babbles. But it's serve and return. It's a great way for them to learn anything, but particularly for language. So if he is just a little bit lazy or he's whatever, this, he starts to get the idea, ooh, we're a team here. We're interacting. And that can really encourage them to say more. Oh, another little tip could be to narrate their lives. So say he's playing with the ball. You go, oh, John has the ball. Now you feel like an Egypt doing it. You feel really, really silly doing it. But say he's going to the going down the slide in the playground or whatever. Oh, John's going down the slide. Just keep narrating really simply because he's thinking, oh, she's telling me what I'm doing. And if he does any little delay, that will help.
Mm. 1 minute to look at this one, and I hope it's enough time for you, but I know your expertise will be able to cover it. Our six-year-old boy has become increasingly physical with not just us, but his sister, teachers and other children in his class. Nothing seems to work. If you take away his toys, he doesn't seem to realise what he's doing is wrong. And when he gets frustrated, he loses control and lashes out. How do we stop children being overly physical?
At six, it's not easy for them to control their emotions. Like they're all these feelings bubble up inside them. We think about, we call tantrums with little ones. Everything is bubbling up. He doesn't understand what to do with it. Talk to him about emotion. Give him something to do. Glitter jar. Tell that parent, Google the word glitter jar. It's a fantastic little tool for kids who are struggling and are feeling explosive. But it's not that he's a bad kid. He just hasn't learned what to do when he feels really explosive. So the more you can talk about emotions, the better he will get.
Yeah, love it. Thank you so much. Sorry if we didn't get to your question this week, but maybe we will next week. Dr. Mary O'Kane, lecturer in psychology and early childhood education. Thank you so much for joining us.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.